Quite often these second big new things fail. And I think that one of the reasons why they fail is because, as Steve Jobs put it in the second product syndrome, the people don't understand why the first product was successful.
Welcome to This is Product Marketing, brought to you by Product Marketing Hive, a product marketing community that gives back. In this episode, Crispin Reed, founder of Product Marketing Hive, talks about the second product problem and how to build a successful second product. Let's dive into it right now. Today, we're happy to have Crispin Reed on our show. Crispin Reed is the founder of our community, Product Marketing Hive. He has been in product marketing and product management for more than 20 years in different roles, from product marketing manager to chief executive officer. And he has worked in companies of different sizes. He's also a mentor to a few startup companies internationally. A true expert indeed. Indeed. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, so to kick off the show today, can you share a little bit about the idea behind the creation of Product Marketing Hive community?
Yeah, the reason we created the Product Marketing Hive was really because, certainly in my experience in product marketing over the years, product marketing knowledge is kind of tribal knowledge. It's passed down from person to person. You know, when I think about how I learned product marketing, it was through the just plain luck of working with some really great people. I mean, I'd had some opportunities to work with some really good people in marketing and in product marketing, and that was how I learned it. You know, it was from just on the job. Here are some techniques, here are some methods. And I think that's true of product marketing sort of everywhere, is that, I mean, there are some training classes you can send people on. I've sent people to a lot of these training classes, but what they teach isn't really what you do in the workplace. It's not necessarily very applicable. And so there's just this problem understanding what the best practice is for a company. And so I thought the Product Marketing Hive, as a community of people who just freely exchange ideas and insights and best practices, and would be a very helpful thing to do in a way of giving back to the community. And certainly I myself have a lot of those techniques and a lot of those best practices that I developed over the years too. So I'm a major contributor to the Product Marketing Hive, but we have other people there too, who are just willing to freely share. And that's the key thing in the spirit of the Product Marketing Hive, is that it's not a community to be monetized. I have another consulting business which is not Product Marketing Hive. And so the Product Marketing Hive is really a place to give back and to share. So that's what it's for.
Wonderful, wonderful. So here at the show, I would like to encourage all the product marketers to join our community, meet other fellows, exchange knowledge and ideas, share your experience and celebrate success with our community. Okay, so diving into today's topic, the second product syndrome. So what exactly is the second product syndrome, or as you refer to it, as a second product problem?
Yeah, so I talk about the second product problem, and I can certainly tell you what I mean. I think that I noticed that Steve Jobs has referred to the second product syndrome as well. I think he's talking about something similar. It might not be quite the same though. So anyway, so the second product problem to me is really specific. It's a company, presumably a tech company. It started by a founder, and what this founder was doing before starting the tech company was something else, right? That someone was working in some kind of an environment. It could have been in business, it could have been in science, it could have been anywhere. And they were trying to do something in their daily lives, but there was an obstacle. You know, they couldn't do it. They had a problem and they didn't have a solution, and they looked and they looked and they looked for the solution, and it just wasn't there. And so they thought, well, this is ridiculous. You know, I'm not the only person who has this problem. Everyone doing my job in the world has the same problem. You know, someone's got to solve it. And, you know, some people, when they come across that situation, they just, you know, I don't know, they find a workaround. And other people are very entrepreneurial. They say, hey, wait a minute, maybe I should start a company. Maybe bring in a more business-oriented partner or a financial investor and just, you know, start a company and grow something. And what happens sometimes then is that, you know, these companies become very successful because they're solving a real problem. There's no doubt about that, because, you know, the person was able to identify with the customer because the person was the customer who started the company. And so they grow very quickly, you know, develop a large customer base, you know, become a large and successful company. And then the second product problem comes along when, okay, like every business, and you know, you can reach hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue with the first product. But at some point, everyone's going to be saying to you as the CEO, is like, okay, what's next? what's your next growth horizon? What are you going to do next? And we're not talking about incremental changes. You've been doing that for the last 5 years or whatever, you know, adding things that might on your price list be called a product, but they're basically the same thing. They're extensions to the same product. So this what's the big new thing you're going to do? And so quite often these second big new things fail. And I think that one of the reasons why they fail is because, as Steve Jobs put it in the second product syndrome, the people don't understand why the first product was successful. And so they don't realize the first product was successful because of where they were at that time, 5 years ago, you know, sitting in a science lab or sitting in a business with a problem. And, you know, now 5 years later, that's not where you are anymore. You know, you're not sitting in a different lab with a different problem or in a different business with a different problem. You're CEO of a big software company. And so your day-to-day problems, they're the problems of someone running a software company. So if you make your next solution about CEO software company problems, then it, you know, it could be a huge hit. But if you're doing anything else, then there's no reason at all why your intuition is going to lead to success.
Yeah, totally agree. So have you seen it in your career before? And do you want to share the story?
I've seen this a lot, repeatedly in a lot of different companies and sort of most of which I probably wouldn't want to talk about because it might be rude. Places, you know, these are non-public stories about places I work, but there's at least one story I can think about which is already public, so I can talk a little bit about that as an example.
Okay.
So this one is Business Objects, and Business Objects was a company founded in France by Bernard Lieto and Denis Paire, and tremendously successful company building business intelligence tools, so data discovery and you know this sort of software, grew very, very well. You know, got to quite a large size company, and then they decided to sort of do something very new and very different, and which has been referred to as the Sundance Project. I think Dave Kellogg has written about this a little bit. Mm. The idea behind this was, okay, we have these business intelligence tools and platforms. What if we create business intelligence applications? The analogy was sort of like the analogy would have been to the database industry, to Oracle. Oracle started with the database products and then moved on to application products. So, you know, perhaps we can do the same thing in analytics. That was the idea. Mm. And it wasn't successful at all. And the reason is because the process that the company followed at that time was, here's an idea from the executive team. Okay, the executive team likes the idea. Let's move that through to development. Let's build the product. Okay, so we build the product. Now we launch the product. Now we'll try and sell the product. And then nobody buys the product. So, okay, well, the problem is we're not trying hard enough to sell it. So let's try harder to sell the product. And so, you know, they were trying very hard to sell the product. And then it sort of, you know, obviously emerged eventually that nobody wanted that product. And so it was a process problem. The problem was that the idea wasn't validated. Mm. It was what people used to call, when people talked about innovation funnels, it would be a funnel bypass. It was a direct move from idea to development and execution.
It sounds like it could happen to anybody. Is it a common problem?
I mean, I think, you know, the sad thing in a way about this is it tends to be something strange that happens to the best companies in a way, because, you know, the most successful and nicest companies that I know have had this problem, and it certainly is more than one. And, you know, it tends to happen when companies have a great initial idea, the founders are very involved, and then they sort of just keep going.
I see. So are there any solutions to the second product problem?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the solutions are to adopt basically any innovation process you like around the second product. And it doesn't even matter, I think, which approach you use. Mm. And just those words, by the way, would create a very strong reaction from a successful founder who used gut feeling to make a $500 million business. Because if your gut feeling gets you a $500 million business, you know, being told you need an innovation process is probably not something you particularly want to hear. But the thing is, if you look at, you know, you can look at Lean Startup, right? The Eric Ries method for starting startups. You could look at even things from 20 years ago, like structured idea management and idea funnels, or you could look at design thinking. All of these different approaches have something in common, which is, you know, absolutely critical, which is that you never, in any of those approaches, take your first idea, go and build it, take it to engineering, build a product, and then take it to a sales force and sell it. That's, none of those ideas ever do that. They're always about either considering multiple options,
yeah,
considering lots of options up front, and then sort of somehow scoring them or validating them, and sort of picking the thing you think is most promising. That's a sort of maybe a more old-fashioned technique. you know, with idea funnels and so on. Or you have more of an iteration-based approach, like the Lean Startup, where you start with a leap of faith hypothesis, you know, something that you believe. But then what you do, and this is so critical, I think the most valuable thing in that book is, you know, when he says, you've got the leap of faith hypothesis, so it's a hypothesis. So what we're doing is science. We're not doing business, we're doing science, right? So your startup is not a business, it's an experiment. And the purpose of the experiment is to test your hypothesis and to iterate as quickly as possible. So there's a sort of built-in assumption in this whole lean startup idea that your first idea is wrong. It's wrong, but that doesn't matter if you're able to modify it and change it quickly enough until you find something that actually resonates with the market. And that's when you move into building the business mode. So the reason the second product problem exists is because people bypass the iteration, the exploration, the investigation of multiple scenarios, and they just go straight from idea, dev team, execution. And you know, I think this is really fundamentally a second product problem as well, because if you think about it, who can actually do that? Who is in a position to do that? If you just created a $500 million company, you can do that. It won't, you know, you're not going to, you could spend $100 million on this and actually fail and get away with it because you have $100 million. Whereas, you know, if you're a startup, then if you took your first idea and just tried to do that, you know, you would have gone out of business fairly early in the life cycle of the company. So you can't, it's difficult to waste that much money and that much time.
Yeah. Do you have any examples for the companies that successfully overcome this second product problem?
Yeah. I mean, I think anyone has a third product. that's kind of one way of looking at it is that, and of course, you know, the good news with all of this is that it's absolutely possible for internal innovation to create, you know, great products. And, you know, there are a bunch of, you know, super well-known companies who do this repeatedly, and they're very successful. I mean, you can look at Apple, and, you know, Steve Jobs writes about Apple III. Apple III is a failure, Apple II is a success.
Yeah.
But then, you know, that was a different Apple to the sort of Apple we've seen more recently, where...
That's actually where he found out about the second product problem. He called it second product syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah. And when he was talking about this, he was actually talking about Pixar.
Yes, he was inspired.
Yeah, he was talking about movies, but... Yeah, but I mean, you know, you can see a later version of Apple was selling a bunch of Macs and then introduced the iPod, right? I mean, that was a pretty major thing, right? I mean, that they ended up selling so much of that iPod idea, which was what was it at the time in its first instance? It was a little hard disk wrapped in a shiny metal box with a wheel on the front, right? That's what it was.
I saw that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So I mean, Apple's another, Microsoft is another example. You know, many successful innovations, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, those are definitely, you know, big examples that come to mind. You know, Microsoft has Xbox. I mean, they did all sorts of things after initial successful first products. And they, you know, these companies, Amazon, right? Amazon started as a bookstore and ended up, you know, doing IT infrastructure. Now, many of these companies, as well, though, I mean, this is important too to think about. While they have many examples of successful products, they also have many examples of failed products. You know, Microsoft certainly has, you know, plenty of failures, you know, so in their sort of corporate innovation graveyard as well. Not only successes, so does Amazon. Does anyone remember the Amazon phone? It used to have like four cameras, and what could it do? And it did this sort of weird 3D effect on the screen because it was following, I don't know, you know, no one remembers the failure. So I think that's important as well to recognize is that, you know, first of all, if you have an innovation process that you're using to solve the second product problem, and even with a good process, there's no guarantee of tremendous success. It's just changing the risk profile a little bit. It's making the thing a little bit less risky, a little bit more likely, or perhaps much more likely to succeed, but there's no guarantee. And similarly, there's no guarantee of failure if you have no process, right?
Yeah.
You know, you could... It's also possible that some genius idea that you move straight to development ends up being super successful. So, you know, none of this is really black and white, but certainly my thought is that I've seen a lot of waste. And, you know, I think that taking the time to think about something is probably a better idea than trying to build it and sell it. And, you know, another way that I talk about this sometimes with people is just think about the cost of software. And the way that I talk about this with people is that if you think that it costs you $1 to think about an idea very thoroughly, I mean to really think about it in depth, to document, and well, obviously it's not $1, but it's, you know, one unit of something, right? So $1 million if you want, let's say it's $1 million. For $1 million you can thoroughly investigate a problem, you can do a market validation of it, you can you can really know whether there's any substance to it, you know, as being a successful business, or at least you can have a very good idea of that. If that costs one unit of cost, then building that product is going to cost you 10 units of cost. And trying to sell that product, certainly if it's B2B tech, is going to cost you 100 units of cost. Therefore, the worst thing you can do is go straight to, you know, idea, build, sell, because you just spent 100, right? Whereas you could have really carefully validated five things and you already would have spent five and you'd have 95 left, right?
So,
so that's another way of thinking about it.
Yeah. So talking about the innovation process, in the article published on the Product Marketing Hive, the second product problem that you mentioned, a sensible way to think about innovation leading to a second product is to tightly constrain the criteria around fit with your existing business. Also, you said fit is about business, not technology. Can you expand that a little bit more?
Oh gosh, yeah, I did say that, and that's true. I agree with myself. fit is the key thing, because I give a couple of examples of this. In one role, which was a company that sold very much infrastructure IT type software, right? Like some security and some other stuff, right? And I was talking to someone there who had an idea for creating a new product that he wanted to push through the company. And in many respects, it was a perfectly reasonable idea. It was also related to security. So, you know, the commonality between that and what this company did was security. Mm-hmm. His idea was related to security for a consumer audience. Mm. And so, you know, looking at that's an example where there's a technology fit.
Yeah.
There's an expertise fit.
Yeah.
The developers who build the enterprise solutions for security can build a consumer solution for security, probably. They understand security extremely well. So in a sense, there's fit, but the fit is not business fit, because that particular company had absolutely no sales channel to consumers at all, didn't do any consumer-facing go-to-market. It was an enterprise company, and by the way, focused on very large enterprise clients. Mm. So that might seem like a good idea from a technical point of view, but the business disruption would just be gigantic. So, you know, you'd have to, as a company to embrace that, you'd have to be willing to completely change your business. And the person I was talking to at the time, I don't think understood that what he was suggesting wasn't a cool technical idea. It was a total change to the company's business. So, that, you know, that's an example of fit. There's another example, which I think is vivid. I was doing some work with a defense contractor. Actually, one of their products that they made available to military organizations was combat training. These products were a little bit like, as you can imagine, a little bit like first person shooter games, except, you know, this was the real army that was using it. So it was very seriously put together, you know, to test command and control structures and military tactics and all of these things, and to train people on how to work together, how to communicate as a team. So the target was the military. But, you know, you could look at it and say, well, this is a bit like a game, isn't it? You know, they had the idea of, okay, well, if we can do this for the military, then we could make an awesome game for people who want to make a sort of first-person shooter game. And so that's another example where if you look at fit, there's a lot of fit there, right? Mm. There's a lot of fit. There's fit in terms of some of the technologies used are a good fit. Some of the expertise used is a good fit, because you can, you know, you might make a very realistic, maybe you'd make a more realistic game if you understand how the military really operates, right? So there's a lot of potential to that idea.
Yeah.
But when you think about it as a business fit, you know, of course, that company didn't have any sales channel or experience selling games to consumers. They had experience selling training solutions to armies. That's an example of a business fit which is low.
Yeah.
So the takeaway here, right, is as you think about your second product, it's inherently a risky process. You can massively increase the cost and risk if it requires some change to your sales channel, right? So my advice then would be, don't do that. You know, just look at your current capability to take things to market, have a second product idea that fits that capability. To me, it wouldn't qualify in my mind as a second product if it solves the same problem for exactly the same people. So, so it doesn't have to be that close. But I mean, if you're used to selling to large businesses, you know, with a sales force, then another product that sells to similar businesses, perhaps to a slightly different person in a similar customer account, following a similar sales process, that would be a very good fit.
Do you have any suggestions to product marketers in a company? They're probably thinking, what's next?
Yeah, I think that, you know, people in product marketing roles, they're going to be sitting if they are faced with a situation like that, they're going to be sitting in a fairly large organization, right? So I would say,
yeah,
you know, a good idea would be don't say innovation process because, you know, those two words sound like they don't go together. You know, just find some more sort of, you know, topical or fashionable expression that ends up resolving to the same thing, which is think about more than one thing before you do it. So for example, design thinking. Should we take a design thinking approach here? That's going to go down better than should we have an innovation process. So yeah, I would say for product marketers, you know, you could have a role which is sort of facilitating the adoption of a certain mindset around this, which is, you know, to think about, you know, encouraging your colleagues in the company to think about multiple options and then somehow evaluate them, or at least to be able to iterate. Lean startup is a good place to start with that. And I think that Lean Startup as a book, you know, the book Lean Startup, the first book in that series, applies very well to large companies. I think that Eric Ries wrote a separate book about large company stuff, but I think the first book is actually fine for thinking about a second product in a large company.
Okay, thank you for joining us today. It was very, very insightful. We're very grateful to have you on the show. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into This is Product Marketing, brought to you by Product Marketing Hive, a product marketing community that gives back. Check out our website, productmarketinghive.com, to join our community, meet fellow product marketers, and access free resources, including training, playbooks, templates, and events. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe and give a 5-star rating on the platform of your choice. See you next time.